Meet the Press focuses on the subject of crime in America. Our guests are six members of the President's Commission on Law Enforcement and Administration of Justice, known as the President's Crime Commission. Their long-awaited report, in preparation for a year and a half and considered the most comprehensive study of crime in the history of our country, was released this weekend. It calls for a revolution in the way that America thinks about crime. With us today are the chairman of the commission, former Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach, now the Undersecretary of State, the executive director of the commission, James Vorenberg, professor of law at Harvard, the chief of police of San Francisco, Thomas J. Cahill, the executive director of the National Urban League, Whitney M. Young, Jr., the president of the League of Women Voters of the United States, Mrs. Robert J. Stewart, and Herbert Wexler, professor of law at Columbia University Law School. Reporters on our panel of questioners are Lawrence E. Spivak, producer and permanent panel member of Meet the Press, Carl T. Rowan of the Chicago Daily News, Max Frankel of the New York Times, Warren Rogers of Look Magazine, and Carl Stern of NBC News. And we'll have the first questions from Lawrence Spivak.
Secretary, Mr. Secretary, your report calls for a revolution in the way America thinks about crime. Now, certainly the American people are disturbed about crime. They want something done about it. They'd like something done about it almost immediately. Just what's wrong with the way America thinks about crime?
Well, I think America thinks about crime in two ways that are wrong, Mr. Spivak. I think the first way in which it's wrong is that they put crime all together, as though crime were one thing that you're talking about. Now, if we talked about disease in that way, it wouldn't make any sense. We'd distinguish between cancer and the common cold. The revolutionary aspect of this report is that it does what President Johnson asked it to do. It has sought out new knowledge, new techniques, and new understanding, and it has covered this in the broadest possible focus. I think this is the first time in many, many years at least that we have attempted in this society to take an honest look at what the problem of crime is, what its causes, what its sources, the conditions which breed it, and what in our total society we can do about it if we will.
Professor Vorenberg, how would you like America to think about crime?
Well, I think the first step is to move beyond the slogans and the scapegoats that people have used so long to think about crime. Claims that the police are handcuffed, or that young people are going to hell, or that all criminals are really sick or misunderstood, or that the courts are coddling criminals. These are not only deceiving, they're one of the main reasons so little progress has been made in dealing with the problems of crime. Something like a witch doctor chance to avoid facing the fact that the system really needs major surgery and major transfusion of money, people, and new ideas. I think the major contribution of the commission is that it's tried to identify these needs and to say who has to do what to meet them.
Chief Cahill, you see crime close, too. You see it every day through the police chief's eyes. What do you think is wrong with the way America thinks about crime today? Or don't you think there's anything wrong with the way they think about it?
Well, I think the report will point up some of the things that we in the field of law enforcement have been concerned about for a long time. And one of the reasons why we have sincerely attempted to elevate the standards of law enforcement to meet the challenges of our time, I think it's going to point up very clearly that the police department, even though it is a very vital and a very important part of the whole field of criminal justice, that it is only a very small part. And I think the report points up very clearly the complexity of the tremendous problems that even we in the police field face. Then add to that the complexity of all of the other problems surrounding all of this, and I think that the public will gain from the work of the commission a clearer recognition of the problems and the responsibilities of all of the disciplines involved in the administration of justice, and particularly the important role that society as a whole can play.
Mr. Young, do you conclude that the crime situation in the United States at the present time is a dangerous threat to our society from what you've seen of the commission report findings?
I wouldn't say a dangerous threat. I would say it's a serious problem. And I think the great contribution of this commission is in putting this problem in its proper perspective. I think there has been a tendency to relate crime and Negroes all too often. I think this report really puts it in the proper focus, pointing out, as it does with facts and figures, that crime is a phenomena of socioeconomic condition and not of race, pointing out how the inner city slums always produce higher crime rates, whether they're occupied during a certain period by the Negro or by Italians or by Germans or Poles or Irish, whatever the group might be. And in pointing out the implications and the ramifications of poverty and poor housing and its impact upon crime, I think now it puts it in its proper perspective, and this is one of the real contributions.
Mrs. Stewart, what do you think is wrong with the way America thinks about crime?
Well, I think for one thing, there's been a great deal of concern and wanting to do something, and most of this has been pretty much wringing of hands and helplessness or a willingness to rise with a spirit of vigilantism. It seems to me that one of the most important things about the Commission's recommendations is that it gives the public a means of translating that concern into action. And in fact, the report does include very concrete and specific means and suggestions for citizens to become involved.
Professor Wexler, a recent article in the Saturday Evening Post says, and I quote, "The American way of dealing with crime and the people accused of crime is an unholy and inexcusable mess." Now, based on the Commission's findings, will you give us your opinion on that?
I think that's a bit of an overstatement, Mr. Spivak. There are good things about it and bad things about it. But insofar as the article points to the general idea that there's one way to deal with crime, that's to hit it hard with tough prosecution, major penalties, boil the culprits in oil. This general attitude is stupid, ineffective, and this report shows why.
Mr. Katzenbach, I'd like to come back to you for a minute. What would you say was the most significant thing that the Crime Commission learned about crime in the United States that we didn't already know, that was particularly new? Or wasn't there anything new?
Well, it told me a lot of things I didn't know, Mr. Spivak. For one thing, I think, for the people who read it, it'll put to death a lot of myths about crime. I would hope that it would. By showing that there are many people involved in this. The crime problem is perhaps worse than we thought it was, but perhaps not what common understanding of it is. I think simply by being analytical about the whole thing, about the whole problem, by showing that there are differences in crimes, differences in victims, differences in the people who perpetrate it, that improvements can be made in the society as a whole, they can be made in the police, they can be made in the court system, they can be made in the correctional system, that it would, as Mr. Vorenberg said, perhaps get this country off thinking that there's one easy pill that you can take that's going to get rid of crime. There isn't.
Mr. Rowan.
Professor Vorenberg, I note that time after time, the Commission comes back to an emphasis on socioeconomic conditions. For example, it says warring on poverty, inadequate housing, and unemployment is warring on crime. A civil rights law is a law against crime. Money for schools is money against crime, and so forth. Was this a view in which the Commission was unanimous?
Yes. There was no dissent to that view whatsoever.
Talking about public attitudes again, do you think the public is prepared to accept this rather broad and compassionate view of crime and criminals?
I think that the public would be prepared to accept that view if it were coupled, as it ought to be, with an effective law enforcement system. Again, I don't think the issue is whether you have either a decent set of social conditions for people to live in or effective law enforcement, effective courts, and effective corrections, because I don't think the most optimistic person thinks that there will ever be a time when social conditions will eradicate all crime. But I think the combination of trying to deal with the roots of the problem, at the same time we're trying to strengthen the operations and the technology of the police and the courts and corrections, I think this is something people will accept.
But isn't it true that what this report boils down to is a request for massive expenditures for social welfare, for education, for race relations? In short, isn't it a ringing appeal for a greater great society?
I think it's a combination of that plus an appeal for more resources and ideas and people in the area of law enforcement and corrections themselves. It's both.
Mr. Frankel.
Chief Cahill, you're one of, as I counted, seven of the 19 members of the commission who wrote what I interpret to be a dissent, though you called it additional remarks to this report. And you suggest that this may be the time when the criminal, as many people think, is living in a kind of a golden age, partly because there's a tendency in the Supreme Court and in popular attitudes that the court reflects to take the side of the accused more and more, to protect him more and more, and to limit the activities in law enforcement. Why didn't the commission as a whole address itself to this problem?
Well, I would like to first say that I did not write the particular paper. I did subscribe to it. Secondly, I would like to say that actually it's not a dissent, and I'd like to make that clear. It's comments by members of the commission, and we in the field of law enforcement, being awfully close to the picture and close to the victims, have been concerned over a long period of time because of changes taking place in our ability to protect the public. Many of them brought about, we feel, by the decisions handed down by the courts on the various levels. We felt that case law controlled our actions on the broad sense, where it may be something that was done by one police officer in just a very minor police action in one segment of the country, and yet it brought about law that pertains to the entire nation and all of law enforcement. And we're concerned that the rights of society as a whole were not fully taken into consideration when these laws were handed down to us. And I think that you have to consider this very seriously, we do, in light of the fact that in many instances the decision was 5-4. And we feel that the four who failed to agree with the five are just as scholarly, just as learned, and just as concerned with the rights of the individual, but that they balance this with their tremendous concern for the rights of the individual in society as a whole, because we can't forget society. We're dealing with the whole group of people.
Well, now, there is a great debate around the country, though, on these questions, with many people in law enforcement saying we can't do the job if we've got to coddle these people and can't even ask a question without a lawyer being around, can't get confessions from people. Others say, no, this doesn't really injure the job of the police departments if they were to do it right, and so on. Why didn't the commission investigate these problems and come up with some studies on whether or not the court has really hampered police enforcement?
Well, of course, I think you've brought up a very good point, Mr. Frankel, because the courts are continually changing our concepts in the field of law enforcement because of the fact that whether we agree or disagree with the decision, as long as this is the law, we in the field of law enforcement will abide by it. And then we can only change our concepts, elevate our standards, and develop new techniques to meet the new challenge. The commission actually just did not have the time to go into these particular types of studies in many areas that we would like to. But the most important thing is that these changes are continually taking place and will for some time to come. And we are just going to have to develop our techniques, change our concepts to meet these new challenges.
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Young, as a civil rights leader yourself, you're acutely aware that the civil rights movement preaches civil disobedience, sit-ins, lie-ins, refuses to move on, and so on. In your studies with the commission, did you find that this might have fostered disrespect for the police and thereby add to the rate of crime?
No, I think, again, one of the great contributions of this commission was to draw a sharp distinction between legitimate civil rights activity and riots, for example. I think that the attitudes of the Negro community, which the commission documented, attitudes of suspicion and hostility in a greater degree than among the white community, was not related to what happened in connection with civil disobedience, but was more related to their day-to-day experiences and the fact that the policeman was accessible and a symbol of authority. And in many cases, many Negroes living in the South, or those who have lived in the South, have suffered at the hands of the policeman, who oft-times was an instrument of maintaining injustice in the status quo.
Did you find a double standard for Negroes? That is, was there a certain way to treat the white people in the community and a certain way to treat the Negroes with respect to arrests and punishments for crime?
Yes, but I would say that what was even more interesting was the fact that this did not tend to be as much racial as it did class. We did find that the blue-collar worker is likely to be arrested sooner and to be defended less, and penalty to be greater than the white-collar worker or the rich. We found almost without exception that only the poor go to the electric chair. We found other examples of not brutality as much as disrespect and impolite language directed toward people who are of less consequence than among others. Now, I don't mean to suggest this as a total pattern, but it was clearly more class. It just so happens that more Negroes are in the lower socioeconomic class, and so it takes on this type of image.
Mr. Stern.
Mrs. Stewart, you and Mr. Young joined in an addendum, let's call it, with respect to the narcotics section of the report, in which you suggested that the commission was taking too traditional a view of the narcotics problem, and then made two suggestions by inference, which it seems to me one is conflicting to the other. You said if the purchase of narcotics were not a crime, forcing up the price, that there might be less crime, since addicts are driven to crime to obtain the money to obtain the narcotics. Then you said that maybe drug use does not produce crime. Perhaps, in fact, both the need for narcotics and the need to commit crimes stem from the same psychological spring. Isn't this conflicting? Which did you mean?
Well, I agreed to join the others in signing this addendum because it seemed to me that the points that you have made, which are really suggestions for further study, we are not attempting in our statement to give answers. We are saying, I think, that what is needed is to consider further than the scope of our report. We raise these questions in hope that research can take place and that an interdisciplinary approach might be taken to these questions. I really don't think I can answer whether or not this seems to be contradictory or not. I think it is important, though, that these and other points that were mentioned in our statement be carefully considered, not only by those of us who are interested in law enforcement, but by sociologists, doctors, psychiatrists, and that we be willing to look at these and other points which were raised.
Well, was the commission supposed to find questions or find answers?
Well, I think they found answers. I think that the report of the commission is very good, and we're not objecting, or at least I'm not objecting, to the report which was made. I think we realize that the President's Commission on the same subject, which completed its work not too long ago, raised some of these issues, and also probably illustrated the fact that an entire commission could spend a great deal of time studying this whole range of issues. So we at least felt it was important to use this occasion to raise these further questions and hope that they won't be overlooked and that we can see what the answers might be.
Mr. Spivak.
Professor Wexler, crime, according to the commission's report, has been increasing at the rate of about 46% during a period, I think, of about 5 years, while the population itself has increased at a much slower rate. Do you think that this rapid increase of crime compared to the growth of the population is due to a growing disrespect for law granting, of course, that there are many different reasons for different crimes. But is there one overriding? Is there one general reason in your judgment?
Well, as you know, this report presents the most detailed and sophisticated analysis of this problem of increased rates of crime to be presented ever, I think, in the literature of criminology. And there's nothing in the picture that would lead one to be willing to accept any single simplistic explanation of the sort that you ask about. The report in great detail shows the changes in the percentage of the population represented by people of different age group, age levels. People of different age levels are prone to a greater or lesser degree to commit crimes of particular kinds. Points to factors like the increase in the number of automobiles, for example, which everybody knows about. It affects necessarily the number of cars that are stolen. Out of all of this, and on the basis of very careful calculations, the staff came up with a conclusion that I think is right, that there has been an appreciable increase in the incidence of crime. Something more than 50% of it, probably plainly attributable to increases in the number of youngsters in the relative number of youngsters in the population and the drift to the central cities that has occurred during the period you have in mind. Something less than 50% of the increase, inexplicable in any terms that data can suggest. I think one must be very skeptical about attributing to the American people as a whole either increased respect or increased disrespect for law or morals or for anything else. Indeed, I think generalizations about the American people as a whole should be avoided so far as possible by everybody.
Well, did the commission find any community at all where the rate was not faster than the population growth? Were there any communities in this country that have been doing pretty well, or have all communities suffered the same way? And has there been a great increase in the rate of crime in all communities?
Well, I don't remember the data well enough to answer that with certainty. I'm sure, however, that there are areas where the rate of increase has been lower than others, and clearly this would be true in the parts of the country where the problem of the central city with the slum and everything that that implies is a relatively minor problem.
You don't believe, then, that there has been a growing disrespect for law due to the sit-downs, due to the civil rights demonstrations, due to the protest meetings and all the rest? You think that during this past decade there's been no breakdown at all in respect for law?
Well, it's entirely a personal opinion, but my recollection of, say, the 1920s when I went to college was that my generation of the class of 1928 in college hadn't had the slightest respect for law. Indeed, we didn't even believe there was a legal system. And as a matter of fact, we were almost right about that.